the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Perhaps you have been transfixed like so many other Americans looking at the court appearance of the BTK killer in Topeka, Kansas. Chilling testimony, an allocution, that's the legal term for what he was doing, relating to the court exactly what he did, how he did it, but in such chilling detail, with such a normal face, with no apparent moral consternation about what he was doing. A lot of Americans are asking the question, how could this be? This looks like the man next door. This was a dog catcher. This was a man who went to church. This was a man who just seemed to fit into the community. And he turns out to have been a cold-blooded killer who spoke in such chilling terms about putting people down as if they were animals. Where does evil come from? There are a lot of Americans who seem to be very, very perplexed about this, wanting to know how a human being can do such things and live with himself. Let's remember, this man did not turn himself in. He was caught. We're going to be talking about this, and we have a very special guest. Robert Vernon was for many years vice chief of police for Los Angeles, California. When you talk about crime, this is a man who has seen it, and he understands what's really at stake. It's going to be a fascinating discussion, and we'll get to that in just a moment. John Leo is one of my favorite columnists. He writes in USA Today and also in U.S. News and World Report. In his most recent column in U.S. News, he talks about double trouble speak. And in America, this is one of the problems we now face. Double trouble speak comes down to the fact that there are people who use the language by misusing it. They use the words, but they're making it appear to serve a purpose the opposite of which the language was intended. Take this. Leo says, it's a living language, but sometimes it's dead on arrival when people toss around euphemisms and gobbledygook. He gives some interesting examples. For instance, the Church of England no longer wants to talk about young couples living together in sin, and so it's talking about now covenanted relationships. Of course, the only thing missing in these covenanted relationships is the covenant of marriage. He also talks about the issue of cloning and how this language has become completely confused. There's a moral evasion at stake when people no longer talk about an embryo, but they now talk about a pre-embryo. Now, what in the world is a pre-embryo? It's what no one wants to call an embryo, but it still is, of course, an embryo or an embryo-like entity. How do you like that? What is that? Well, it's another embryo. But by means of linguistic evasion, these people don't want to admit what they're doing is destroying an embryonic human being. The International Society for Stem Cell Research has opted for the jargon, suggesting that the word cloning now should be dropped in favor of referring to the technique as somatic cell nuclear transfer. Did you follow that? Somatic cell nuclear transfer. People hear that. They do not hear cloning, but that's exactly what they're talking about. We have to be on guard against doublespeak. George Orwell, the great novelist of the 20th century, reminded us of that. Language is everything in terms of the control. If you control the language, you control the meaning. It's a fight. We've got a fight on our hands just about clarity and language, but we ought to be the people as Christians who remember that we call things by their proper name and we use language to say what we mean, not to mislead. We've been tracking the development of these new homosexual-oriented channels on cable television. Now, Logo, that's the MTV Network's new gay channel, is going to begin on Thursday. Very interesting press about all of this. For instance, Brian Grayton, who's the president of Logo, said this, quote, "When you tell a story about gay rodeo or gay surfers, it's not a story about sex, nor does it need to be. So much connects us beyond sexuality," end quote. Well, who's he kidding? If you identify someone as a gay rodeo contestant or a gay surfer, you're the one that brought up gay. If you put on a gay channel that has gay actors and gay-themed programming and gay-oriented advertisements, you're talking about homosexuality. It's kind of hard to take the sexuality out of homosexuality, especially since the homosexual culture is so upfront in terms of its sexuality and sensuality. Have any of you seen press coverage from last Sunday's, just 2 days ago, folks, last Sunday's Gay Pride anniversary? We talked about the 35th anniversary of Gay Pride parades all over America. Let's just say that most of those photographs are not G-rated. Well, they can kid themselves, but what about the advertisers? Who's responsible for the money behind these new networks? Well, take this. Howard Buford, who is the founder of Prime Access, an ad agency specializing in gay and ethnic marketing, said this. If there's a channel dedicated only to redecorating a house or only to preparing food, it seems a channel for gays and lesbians should have preceded that. Well, let's think about this for a moment. You talk about niche advertising. How many people out there who might be interested in, say, preparing food? How many people out there might be interested in remodeling a house? Something tells me, Mr. Buford, that it's going to be higher than the percentage of people who are homosexual, even by the most extremely exaggerated statistics. It tells you just how self-referential, how self-focused this movement really is. The lead advertisers for this new network will include Miller Lite, Subaru, and Motorola. You may want to keep that in mind. You know, sometimes when you look at the newspapers these days, or watch television for that matter, it's not so much the news stories that catch your attention, but the advertisements. And the New York Times is advertising one of its own products in today's edition. It is the column Modern Love. It's in the Sunday Styles section of the New York Times. You got to see this. It's a full-page ad in today's. It's page B9 if you have the paper before you. It shows a heart, two cartoon characters, but get the tagline. Modern love means your new boyfriend graduated the same year as your son. Now there's postmodern America for you. Here you have a woman, presumably divorced, who's going to develop a new relationship with a boy her son's age. That's love in the fast lane in the 21st century. That's what's going to be featured, evidently, in the pages of the Modern Love column in the Sunday Styles of the New York Times. Well, you can't say you weren't warned. We're all watching to see if there is a resignation from the U.S. Supreme Court. There's a lot of speculation, and people were holding their breath yesterday to see what might happen. No resignation. Not yet. The speculation is, of course, that Chief Justice William Rehnquist, who is ailing and suffering from cancer, might very well resign or retire from the bench. There's also speculation that Justice Sandra Day O'Connor might announce her resignation or retirement. On both sides, special interest groups, political organizing entities are getting ready to fight. Mail lists and the prepackaged mailings are already ready. The political battle is already shaping up, folks. And all you have to do is listen to the conversation going on across America, and especially on C-SPAN and CNN and Fox News, and you know that there is a big battle coming. And let me just remind you that this is a battle that matters. Because the federal judiciary, need we just think this week? Let's just think about yesterday's decisions on the Ten Commandments. The federal judiciary has a power currently in America that far outstrips its constitutional authority. And when we talk about an activist judiciary, we're talking about exactly what we saw yesterday. Judges who are doing nothing more than legislating from the bench. You have Justice Breyer yesterday deciding that, one monument can stay and the other one must go because in his judgment, one meets this purpose and the other meets that. I agree with George F. Will, who in his column this morning said it looks like the Supreme Court has just decided for the last 25 years to ignore everything that the founders and the framers of the Constitution believed about the freedom of religion. We're going to be watching this with you. Speaking of watching, tonight President George W. Bush is scheduled to address the nation. It will be live at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. It's going to be carried by C-SPAN, MSNBC, and several other of the networks. It's going to be an opportunity for the president to update the nation on the war in Iraq, and this comes in the midst of controversy as well. There's no doubt. You can just look at the poll numbers, and you know that Americans are getting queasy about Iraq. Is this a quagmire? Is this a new Vietnam in the making? The president wants to speak to America about his exit strategy, and let's just remind ourselves of what is at stake. I think Americans now, in 2005, have begun to forget 2001. It's very easy for us to look at the world now when we haven't been attacked in a long time and to consider that we live in a situation that just stands on its own. But no historical situation stands on its own 2 feet. History is a moving situation. It is a flow. All events are connected to all other events. And we can't talk about 2005 and the current challenge in Iraq without looking at our position in the world and how America found itself vulnerable to attack not only by terrorists, but by what Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld calls asymmetrical warfare. No one said it was going to be easy. We need to remember that there are folks all around the world who are even willing to die as suicide bombers. That's what they call themselves. We should call them homicide bombers in order to make their point. Human life has been devalued. Their political agenda is put above everything else. That is a phase of evil in the world today. America saw evil on September 11, 2001. And America saw evil yesterday in Topeka, Kansas, when in a courtroom, a man stood up to tell how he had murdered people in chilling and cold and gruesome detail. How can a human being do such a thing? Where does evil come from? You're not going to want to miss this conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. A lot of America was just transfixed yesterday watching television, and it was one of those moments I think a lot of people will remember because they were looking into the face of a man who was pleading guilty and then describing in the most graphic terms 10 murders. He pled guilty to 10 murders. The man is Dennis Rader, age 60. He's a former Boy Scout leader, a church president for a Lutheran congregation in Wichita, Kansas. He is a former code officer. He's been described as a dog catcher and a compliance officer. Basically, he had a minor governmental post going from place to place, making sure code was enforced. But as he went, he was looking for victims. He spoke so graphically yesterday of trolling for victims. He spoke about his murder as if it was a part of some kind of profession as a serial killer. He spoke in terms of what we do. He looked very normal, however. He looks like he could be your next-door neighbor. He described these brutal murders in the most grisly and graphic terms and in an unemotional voice. He talked about using hit kits, and he spoke about murdering human beings in terms of putting them down as if they were animals being euthanized. It's just hard to imagine. How can a human being do this? And we as Christians ought to have the answer to that. We're the people who should know and be unsurprised, even though we are so gravely disappointed, when such evil shows its face. With me on the phone today is Bob Vernon. For many years, he's the former assistant chief of the Los Angeles Police Department. And, Mr. Vernon, it's an honor to have you here on the program.
It's good to be with you.
Mr. Vernon, my guess is you've seen it all in Los Angeles. Does this kind of case surprise you?
Not really. I worked on a lot of serial cases like this during my 38 years, and nothing really surprises me anymore, and I don't think really should surprise anyone. There's a fallacy that goes around today. Today, the wisdom of man says that when man's born, he's basically good. Therefore, he ought to turn out pretty good, unless someone causes him to do evil or the environment pushes him over. I'm not saying the environment doesn't have any impact on someone, but that's completely a contrary position of what God and the Bible says. God says man is born basically with an evil heart, has to be brought out of that evilness, has to be saved from it, has to have God do a work in his life. So, you know, when people assume that people are good and everything is going to be all right, then things like pornography and all other kinds of factors come in and push them over the edge.
Mr. Vernon, you did spend 38 years with the Los Angeles Police Department, many of those years as assistant chief. I first came to know of you by seeing your name in the media, and then I read your book, L.A. Justice, that was published a few years ago. And you know, you're really very honest in that book about the fact that you had to wake up every morning and deal with this kind of awful criminality. How did you do that without developing some kind of hardened heart or without becoming morally insensitized to all this?
Well, it wasn't easy, and in fact, a few years into my career, I became aware of the fact that I was getting hardened and calloused, and it was kind of a wake-up call. I had to begin facing that and asking God to help me to work through it. Number one, a police officer, by virtue of the job, you know, we have to see and become aware of evil in the world. It's our job. We're not called to a scene when everything's okay. We're called when things have gone sideways, when things are bad, when murders have been committed, when children have been molested. And so a constant diet of that can cause you to build up a kind of a defensive callus. once you're aware of that, you can be working on it and start bringing balance into your life. One of the ways I brought balance early in my career was to begin teaching a junior high boys Sunday school class. And, you know, seeing some kids come every Sunday with their heads screwed on right, trying to do what's right, looking for guidance, that brought a lot of balance into my life.
I think that's a healthy word for us all to hear. Quite frankly, as the father of a middle school boy, I can associate with exactly what you're saying here. Mr. Vernon, when you look at this case from Wichita, Kansas, and I'm sure you at least are familiar with the general nature of this crime, you know, how do you, having so many years of experience in the criminal system, how do you explain from a justice perspective how we as a society should respond to this man and to his crimes?
Well, number one, we're all sinners, and so he's not unique in that way, except he's unique in going to the extent that he went in acting out evil thoughts and pushing it over to committing these horrible murders. You know, I've seen some debate upon, you know, should anyone like a pastor even talk with him? I mean, he's so evil, just let him go to hell or whatever. Well, if I had my way, I think he should be executed. But on top of that, I don't think we should say because we're going to execute him, and I know that the laws in that state do not allow that, but if it could, we shouldn't say because we think it's right to execute him, therefore we let him go as far as his soul. I think there still should be some interest in his soul, and we're not in a position of being God and judging him for eternity, but I think he should pay for his crime. I really do, and I'm disappointed that they can't apply the death penalty in this case.
And my understanding, Mr. Vernon, is that the reason they can't do that is that when these crimes specifically were committed, it was in that period between at which the Supreme Court had ruled the death penalty unconstitutional and after a subsequent court decision, Kansas reinstated the death penalty. And so it looks like this man, you know, falls right in that historical crack in terms of his crimes. But, you know, one of the assurances we have as Christians is that here on earth, the best we can do anyway is some kind of proximate justice. Ultimate justice is in God's hands. And when God judges, he judges not only the behavior, that's what we judge, he judges the heart.
He judges the heart. It says that when he judges, he'll bring it, the exact phrase, I think, is he'll bring the motives to light.
Yes.
Which is really scary.
Well, let's talk about that motive for just a moment, because I think what really caused Americans to take pause yesterday was the fact that this man seems to give evidence of no remorse, in fact, of no moral concern for the nature of his crimes. Have you seen that before? You know, how do you explain where that comes from?
Yes, I have seen that. And I think it brings to light another biblical reference where it says that it's possible to have your conscience seared as with a hot iron. And I think that's what happened in this case. My personal opinion, I haven't talked with this man, so I don't have any personal knowledge other than what I've got off the internet and other places, but my guess would be he did not start out being a murderer. He started with other things that led up to this. It wasn't one giant step of one day, I think I'm going to be a murderer. No, I would predict that he was involved in pornography, that he took other evil steps along the line, that he did other things that eventually led to the point of murder, but it didn't just happen overnight.
Well, I'm sure you're right about that, but it did happen over a period of time, and at the end of that period, we know that at least 10 people were dead. And when the testimony came yesterday, I think the legal term for it was an allocution, as he was given the details of his crimes. He just recited, in fact, where he put the children and how he related to these people, and spoke as if he had compassion for them by letting them have a glass of water before he strangled them. It's the weirdest lack of any moral concern or center of gravity whatsoever.
Unfortunately, he's not alone. There are other people like that, and it's like I say, they're conscious that have been seared. They don't have any feeling about this. He, I understand, talked about his victims as projects.
That's right. And unfortunately, there are projects that ended in death. Our guest today has been Bob Vernon, for many years assistant chief of the Los Angeles Police Department, and a man with a deep Christian conviction that comes very clear, as you heard today. Thank you, Mr. Vernon, for joining with us. Folks, I want to hear from you. How would you explain this man and his crimes? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mohler.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, it was fascinating to hear Bob Vernon, after years as assistant chief of the police department in Los Angeles. I mean, this is a man who's seen everything, and it was encouraging to me to hear a man who's obviously so thoughtful, not only articulate, but deeply thoughtful about these issues. I can only hope that the rest of America could be similarly thoughtful. But I'm afraid that what really attracted a lot of people yesterday was just the macabre, spectacular nature of what it was like as a spectacle to watch this man describe his crimes. Now, you know, these days, the cable news networks, in terms of what they cover, really tell us a lot about the society. Yesterday, both of the main cable networks, CNN and Fox News, broke out of the live story there in Wichita, Kansas, went to the U.S. Supreme Court for the Ten Commandments decisions, and then went right back, just so they wouldn't miss much in terms of the testimony that Dennis Rader was giving. By the way, the testimony is available on the Internet. It's 87 pages long, and it's found at Kansas.com there from the Wichita newspaper. And here's my challenge today, folks. I can't read you out of this. It is so grotesque, it is so awful, and in some places so pornographic. There's simply no way I can tell you this. But I know right now that a lot of you were watching yesterday. If you didn't see it live, then you saw it rebroadcast on television. You've been reading about it, and I think you're ready to talk about it. And here's what I want us to talk about. How in the world do we explain this man? Say you've got a child who's coming up to you saying, how can someone do this? What would you say? How do you explain to your neighbor where this comes from? Because this is a time when we as Christians have an opportunity to really talk about what matters, to really get to the heart of the issue. And I want to hear how you would explain that. Let's just say that your child comes up to you, a school-age child, and just has caught the news about what happened and says, you know, how could a man do this? This guy looks like he could be standing next to you in the grocery store. This could be your next-door neighbor. This was the animal compliance officer who may have been just driving along the roads in your neighborhood. How do you explain this? When your neighbor says to you, you know, I just don't know where this comes from. What do you say to them? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about Dennis Rader, his testimony confession that came yesterday to Wichita courtroom, and why it matters. You know, shortly after World War II, the Holocaust began to sear the human conscience, especially in the West, in the U.S., and in Great Britain, and in Europe. How could anything like this have happened? How in the cradle of civilization, where Christianity had once shaped the minds of the people, how could this people turn into a murderous process and industry of killing Jews? I mean, these are people who killed the Jews and put them in the ovens by day and went home and had dinner with their children and petted their dogs at night. When Adolf Eichmann was arrested by the State of Israel some years later, Hannah Arendt, the philosopher, looked at him and described what she called the banality of evil. This is evil that looks like your next-door neighbor. This was the man who was the mastermind of killing millions of Jews and gypsies and homosexuals and all the rest. And he looked like, well, she described him, like an accountant or a bank teller. You see, we'd like to think that someone of this evil, someone capable of this, someone who would do this, would look like this, would somehow, by his face and by his physical representation, look evil, like some kind of cartoon character, so that we would see him in a crowd and say, look, there he is. But we didn't do that. We couldn't see this. Years after these murders, Dennis Rader is operating in the community. He's going to his church. He's elected to office in his church. He's a Boy Scout leader and all these things. No one seems to have noticed. Don't you think we want to know? We would like to be able to have some kind of evil detector that would just all of a sudden, like some kind of Geiger counter, tell us when we are in the presence of such evil. But here's the worst thing. Let's be honest. When we saw that testimony yesterday, we know that the real question is, why wouldn't I do that? Is it because I'm better than Dennis Rader? Is it because I'm incapable of these things? You see, this is where the Christian doctrine of sin has to come in. When it explains that sin gets right to the core of who we are, it's not only what we do, it's what we think, it's how we feel. There is within us from the moment of our birth, in fact, even before our birth, from the moment of our conception, there is within us this thing called sin. It results in the doing of what is evil. In Romans chapter 1, the Apostle Paul gives an entire catalog of such evil, and he deals with everything from being disobedient to parents to being gossips, and he deals with sexual perversion and all the rest. That evil isn't something that's abstract. We talk about out there as if it's in someone else. We know that evil is in us as well. Why does it come out in such awful form in a man like Dennis Rader? How does that happen? And how do we as a society respond to it? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It's time for you to talk about it. I'm Albert Mohler. It's being replayed over and over and over again, at least segments of the testimony yesterday from Dennis Rader about his murders, and a lot of Americans are talking about it, and glad to say that people all over America are ready to talk about it right now. First of all, from Hayes, Kansas, just outside Wichita, Earl's calling, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Earl, what do you make of all this?
Well, I think your question was, how would you explain this to your children if you had the chance? And I think we'd have to say that it's with us because we've denied absolute truth. We've denied the fact that we're born with a sin nature and that the devil is present with us. And we as a society have embraced evil. There's not a lot of blocks between where Mr. Rader conducted his projects and where an abortion doctor in Wichita is protected to perform late-term abortions. And then in between, we celebrate a professor in the Ivy League schools that believes killing a child that hasn't yet reached an age of awareness is okay, and we have elected politicians who openly debate the right to euthanize elderly or sick people. So I'd say, son, there's evil about us. We have to recognize absolute truth, and we have embraced this as a society, and I'm sorry to have contributed to it.
Earl, thank you so much for your call. I have to tell you that you said something that I was thinking when I first heard about all this, and I'll just admit right up front, I know that you can't make a causal line and say that A leads to B, but I got to tell you, in Wichita, where you've become something like the capital of late-term abortions in America, you're exactly right. You know, that there are a lot of people who obviously have just grown morally comfortable, or at least tolerable, with the idea that you've got very, very late-term, fully formed fetuses, human babies being aborted right down the street. And you're right, all over America, we bear cumulative responsibility for this, having Peter Singer at Princeton, whom you referenced, and all the rest. Earl, I think you raise a very interesting question. You know, why do we get so choosy when it comes to the kind of evil that really offends us? I think we've reached the point, some kind of lowest common denominator of moral consciousness in America, where it takes almost something like Dennis Rader and the murder of 10 people expressed in such grisly terms that almost all Americans say, you know, that's wrong. That's evil. And there goes moral relativism out the door. Thanks for your call, Earl. Let's go to Robert calling from Laurel, Mississippi. Robert, go right ahead.
Yeah, you kind of had two questions, and I'm going to make my answers brief. First of all, the answer, we really don't have an answer other than the fact that going all the way back to Adam and Eve, we are separated from God because of our sin. And until we enter that love relationship with Christ, we don't have the Holy Spirit guiding and dictating our every move. We don't focus on the scriptures in our guidance. Therefore, these people that are living out of the will of God, separated from Christ, they're governed, so to speak, by a different set of standards. So the second question you had was, what do we do about it? I think the number one thing and the only thing we can do about it is we have to be more active and more involved in witnessing. We never know. You said earlier on the broadcast, this man looks like your next-door neighbor. So we need to make sure our next-door neighbor knows the love of Christ and is in that love relationship with Christ and is guided every step of their life by the Spirit, by the Word of God.
Oh, that's always an appropriate statement to make, always a good encouragement to remember that, you know, let's just put it this way. You know, back in many decades ago, there were two little boys that grew up together, next door neighbors. One of them became an evangelist, and the boy next door was Lee Harvey Oswald. And you just wonder what would have happened had Lee Harvey Oswald heard the gospel, you know, and responded to it. At the same time, you know, the reality is that most lost people don't become mass murderers. And here again, we do have a theological explanation for that. It's God's restraining grace. God restrains evil. Otherwise, if it ran at full volume, if evil was just set loose among us, we'd all kill each other. Let's be thankful that God does restrain that kind of evil, but we see its outbreak, as the folks in Wichita, Kansas, came to know it literally face-to-face. Let's go to Patty in Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Patty, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Hello. My take on this, too, is that, you know, the Bible does say we're born with a sin nature and that, you know, the heart is just desperately wicked. But at the same time, I've just, God has given me an amazing ability to love these people. I work in prison ministry, and I've, you know, have talked with men that are in there for manslaughter. And one of them is just a terrific guy. It's just, you know, I believe Christ died for them, and that it's still our responsibility to, you know, share the gospel with them and to believe that God can change that heart and can use them and to welcome them into our churches.
Yeah, you know, Patty, without diminishing Dennis Rader's personal responsibility for his sin, which is absolute, there's a real sense in which we have to look at him and say, there but by the grace of God go I. You know, why is it that I am not Dennis Rader? Why is it that I did not do that? It's not because I'm not a sinner. But by God's grace, sin was restrained in me that kept me from doing that. And those of us who are believers in the Lord Jesus Christ know that we have come to know our sin for what it is, at least insofar as that's humanly possible, insofar as we come to know our absolute need for a Savior. And that's by grace. It's not that we were smart enough to figure this out. It's not that we were good enough to avoid doing these things. It's the fact that God's grace and mercy reached even us, reached to us as it can reach others too. And that's the thing. That's the amazing thing in all of this. And that's what drives the secularists absolutely crazy. When you suggest that even a person like Dennis Rader could come to a saving knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ, that's not an easy thing. It's obvious that there is a huge obstacle to that right now, and that's the fact that Dennis Rader is not even honest with himself about his sin. That was very clear yesterday. If Dennis Rader was even to the slightest degree aware of his sin, you would have seen a man yesterday hardly able to speak, to describe, as the court would require him to do, the awful things that he had done. His words would have been dripping with remorse. You would have seen a broken heart that had come to terms with his sin. But that's not what we saw. What we saw yesterday was what Hannah Arendt saw when she saw Adolf Eichmann, a man that just shows no signs whatsoever of any remorse, any moral concern, any moral awareness of the evil that he has done. He described his work as if he were a professional, just doing his job, or a hobbyist, just following a hobby. He was murdering human beings in the coldest and most calculated way, playing out a drama in his mind that led from evil to evil to evil. And he lived in Wichita, Kansas, right next to people who had no idea that evil of this sort was right next door. I'll be back with some further thoughts in just a moment, live from Louisville, Kentucky. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Folks, every once in a while we need a wake-up call, and this case of Dennis Rader kind of gives us one of those calls. We need to remember who we are as human beings, what it means to be human, what it means to be a sinner. This is an important thing for us to acknowledge, and culturally, given a news story like this, here's an opportunity. Back at the turn of the last century, when the discipline of psychology was new, at Harvard, the main professor of psychology is William James, the philosopher who also gave birth to the modern American philosophy of pragmatism. He was a senior member of the faculty, and so when a new building was built at Harvard, he had the opportunity to choose the motto that was going to go over the door. He chose the motto from the Greek philosopher Epictetus. You know the line, man is the measure of all things. He went away for a summer vacation, and the president stayed. The president didn't like the motto, and when William James came back, he discovered that man is the measure of all things was taken off, and in its place over the building was, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Two different worldviews represented there. Man isn't the measure of all things. You know, that's why those who hold to a liberal philosophy of life or to a liberal theology can't handle Dennis Rader. They can't explain where this comes from. For at least the last 150 years, there's an entire cultural movement dedicated to telling us we're basically good. Whatever bad things happen or whatever bad things we do are not our fault. They're the fault of our environment or of our parents or of our school system or of whatever we ate or whatever kind of radioactivity we came into contact with or asbestos we breathed in. The Bible is much clearer about the reality. It's not something out there. It's something in here. And that is a deeply humbling message that human beings need to hear. Dennis Rader's allocution yesterday, his confession, broadcast on live streaming national television, is a graphic reminder to all of us that evil not only lives next door. When we're honest, we know we're looking at it in the mirror. We're looking at a sinner. Now, not all of us sin in terms of committing the same sins or to the same extent, and that's why we have a criminal justice system to say that there are not merely sinners in prison and non-sinners outside, but in prison are those who belong to be there because they have broken particular laws that are absolutely necessary in order to protect society from people like Dennis Rader. It's a good wake-up call for us that we think as intelligent Christians in a way that demonstrates we know where sin comes from, and we're the people who aren't surprised, disappointed, yes, sometimes even shocked, but not really surprised. Folks, this is the time for intelligent Christian conversation. You need to have an answer when you speak to your neighbor, when you speak to your child, when you're standing in the grocery line and someone points to this headline and says, "How do you explain that?" Folks, remember, you've got the answer. Tomorrow we'll be back for Ask Anything Wednesday. You get to set the agenda. Whatever's on your mind, give us a call. Write me by email at albertmuller.com. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.